Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to PODNUTS Daily, episode number 457, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Halish. I'm joined today by Paco LeBron from Prodigy Techs. How you doing, Paco?
I'm doing fantastic.
Awesome, man. Glad to have you on the show. So the reason Paco actually got a hold of me and said, you know what? I would really like to do a series on part-time techs. What it takes to get started. How do you do it? What are some of the things to look out for? So maybe we can avoid or help you guys avoid some of the pitfalls that we've all fallen into. And so we're going to do that, and we're going to call this, and I don't know how long the mini series is going to be, but it's going to be the beginnings of a part-time tech. And the first episode, which is this one, we're basically going to name it Starting Out. All right, Paco. So let's, where do you want to start?
I think we should start obviously from the beginning, but,
always,
I think that a lot. So as I was starting out and just kind of thinking this whole thing through, I was trying to figure out what are some things that I wish I could have done differently. What things that I thought about back then on starting this whole endeavor of, you know, Prodigy Techs as it is today. And for those who don't know a little bit of the backstory, essentially I was working for a buddy of mine. I didn't agree with how he was doing things. So I decided to do it on my own. So one of the things I started to think about was what type of tech do I want to be? And some of the areas that you guys may be familiar with is, are you the type of tech that wants to work from home? And I know that Jeff, you work from home as for your shop,
right?
Do you want to have just an address, a PO box that presents yourself, a virtual office, or opening up an actual shop? So having some type of physical location or address that's not of your own home. The other one being, maybe you want to be the type of tech that wants to visit clients, whether it be in their homes or it be in the actual small businesses that a business owner is running. Then there are those who just simply may want to do just remote only. Now, these are all ors or ands, right? So some people may want to do one or the other. Some people may just want to specifically do one thing. And that's kind of what I started thinking about on my end, on really trying to figure out how I wanted to do it. But I guess how I really want to start it off is just kind of inquiring on what are the benefits from doing each individual one.
Let's look at the pros and cons of each one, and we'll kind of discuss our thoughts on what we think about each one and how it relates to maybe our businesses or people that we know in the industry.
Yep, exactly. So for it's funny because I think I heard Jeff throw up in his mouth a little bit.
Exactly.
But so I guess we'll start with you on the working from home. On being able to kind of figure out what are the pros and why you decided that this was going to be your model on how you wanted to go.
So one of the reasons I really started working from home is obviously a lot of us will start in this business and maybe we'll work on friends and family's computers. And maybe we will start and we'll have tools that we have set up at home and monitors and different things that we can work on these computers. Because back when I started, there was still a lot of desktops. Getting a lot of desktops. Now, I get very few desktops. I would say 25% desktops, 75% laptops. But back then, you had to, you know, I was using big CRT monitors. I don't know if you guys know what those are, but those are big, big cathode ray, heavy 17-inch monitors that you could basically knock somebody out with.
Whenever you used to go to your grandparents' house and they had that big type of TV, yeah, that's the type
there
of monitor.
There you go. So one of the reasons I really wanted to work from my home is a part-time tech is because I had a full-time job. And because I had that full-time job, I only had so many hours in a day. So for me to do other things like maybe go on site or whatever, maybe weren't going to work well for me. But in the evening times, because I was working a day shift, I would come home. People would call me in the evening. They could come and drop their computer off. I could work on it. And back then, I would usually get it back to them the next day. Because here's what I would do. I would work on it like into the wee hours of the morning, go to sleep, get up the next day, maybe have them come back the next evening to pick it up. And that's how I basically started off. But it was really about a convenience for me as far as what I did on a regular basis that I didn't have time. Now, not that I didn't go on site, but I tried not to because that would eat up more time where I could have two or three people in an evening, if it ever turned out to be that way, that they could drop it off, or so I thought. So that's really why I got started as a home part-time tech.
Gotcha. Now, when you first started out, where you're at or where you were before, it's mostly a rural area, right?
Not really. I would say In both areas, I've lived in a city.
Okay.
So as far as like regular neighborhoods, I wouldn't say rural as far as it's not like we were living in farmhouses that were spread by, you know, miles at a time. You basically live next door to your next door neighbor. You would have neighborhoods with 400 or 500 houses, whatever. And they were all kind of together. And plus I was in an area where I lived close to the east side, closer to Detroit at the time, that I could kind of spread out a little bit because I was real close to the water. So I could only go inland. I couldn't go across the water because that was Canada and those weren't my customers.
Right.
So I basically, you know, kind of made a, what looked like back then when I was doing Google AdWords, I used what looked like a shape of a boot is the areas that I wanted to concentrate on. And again, I kept it to a smaller area. Now, back then I would travel about 45 minutes one way to get to a customer's place. And I've quickly figured out that I didn't want to do that anymore. it was too, when you're working a full-time job and you're trying to do this part-time, you figure 45 minutes there, 45 minutes back, that's an hour and a half. You're looking at, let's face it. The reality is most house visits are going to be minimum 2 hours, right?
Yep.
How many people actually do a house visit in 1 hour? So being 2 hours plus the hour and a half, you're looking at 3.5 hours.
Right.
If I get home from work by 6 o'clock, let's say, or 5 o'clock, you're pretty much into the evening time then. And if you do have anything sitting on your bench, by the time you get back, it's going to be harder to work on that stuff. So that was kind of my philosophy back then.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So for me, when I thought about this solution, I was more concerned about safety. And that was a bigger concern to me whereas I didn't want people to know where I lived. And being in the city, well, that things kind of changed recently, but having my daughter here and just being in the city, just there's all types of different people out there. So it was always right. A concern for me on if I had my daughter here, even if let's say because I normally don't have people over when my daughter's here that I don't know. And, you know, for someone to drop off a PC or buy a PC, like, cause we're, you know, we are a Microsoft refurbisher. We would go ahead and sell some of these PCs, through traditional avenues, eBay, Craigslist, et cetera. And having someone in the home with her there, it just never sat with me comfortably, doing it that route. That was one of my concerns. And then the other concerns as well is, you know, you never know if, you know, a computer job went wrong. Again, there's different type of people out there. It was always one of those where the safety was the biggest concern for me. And I just didn't want to go that route for myself.
Gotcha. Now I will say one of the things that probably in my pricing scheme back then, because I was working out of my home is even back then, and this would have been 2010, my pricing, I was doing a flat rate pricing for pretty much everything. And it was $79. So it's $79 in that particular area. Every once in a while you get not the greatest customers, but for the most part, they were pretty decent customers and they were coming there when I was at home. So I would get home in the evening. I would get a call at 6 o'clock, 6:30. They'd come drop the computer off. They were glad because I was actually open later at that time in the evening And that's the only time they drop the computer off. So I felt pretty secure in knowing that, I mean, people come to the house all the time. So it wasn't as huge an issue for me, but depending on your area, that can make a huge difference. Or depending on, you know, obviously my family was there all the time, plus my dog and several guns. So I really wasn't concerned too much about that.
Right.
So, but
yeah. So, and then, you know, there's always the thought of like sometimes, like, and like another piece is, you know, I was always worried about theft as well. Sure. So, you know, I'm not home a majority of the day. And if they know I'm a part-time tech and if they know I'm not home, and depending on, again, there's different type of people out there, you know, there's always that one time where, oh, who knows which customer was it, and trying to figure out who it was and coming home to something like that. And it's just never a good thing.
Right.
Especially if you're if you live on your own, or just in general, if somebody is home, you know, and that were to occur. So that was, again, going back to that safety, that's kind of where going for me, that was the cons on my part for working from home, which led me into thinking about establishing an address elsewhere.
Right.
Because originally, when I first started this all out, I originally wanted to do on site, which we'll touch in a minute. And that was always my purpose. But the reason why I kind of fell into getting an address was, A, I wanted someone to know that, hey, there's a physical address to this business. And with a lot of tech support and a lot of ways that where just the way of how things kind of rolled into with, like, you know, nowadays the online tech support scams. And back then, you never knew when you went to a website if this person was local or not. And I wanted to establish a presence that specifically said, hey, we are local. We are your local computer techs to here to help you out. So that was the one of the reasons. And the other reasons was we had established ourselves with Amazon, and Amazon just came out with their Amazon local services, which was going to be their competitor to Groupon. So I thought that was going to be a great opportunity to jump in bed with Amazon and be able to get some market share and some good advertisement for that. So that's kind of what led us to do the address. Now, why we didn't do a PO box versus the virtual office that we're at now is because we needed somehow where if a customer came in with the device, we needed someone to take it and fill out paperwork. So right. Okay. A traditional PO box wouldn't do that. And there's a difference between PO boxes. If you were to get a post office box with the USPS, it's going to literally be just a post office PO box, whatever the number is. However, if you were to get a mailbox from UPS, or if you got one from FedEx, they actually will give you the address of that location with what's called the suite number, which in reality is your box. So this helps with when you're purchasing things, when you're applying for things, you now have an address that you can put on there, whereas some of these applications or things that you're applying for don't accept PO boxes to accept these type of shipments.
Okay. That's good information right there, because I didn't realize what the differences were.
Yep. So that's why you notice a lot of people will do a UPS or a FedEx box, because it'll be the address versus a PO box that the USPS or the United States Postal Service would provide them. But you run into the problem where you got paperwork, you want to make sure that you are, you know, you're set up, you want to make sure that you're good to go. And it was one of those where, since you wanted to make sure everything was good with the PC and you wanted to make sure there was an actual person that would take responsibility on taking that PC, that's why I went ahead and chose going with a virtual office. Now, the reason why I did the virtual office was because it was for the pricing that they gave us, and we're with Regis, but there are many others that are global. There are some, Regis is global. I believe DaVinci is global as well. And there's many others that are out there, depending on your area, that has this virtual office feature. And essentially what a virtual office is all the perks of having an office suite without the overhead as much. I pay a monthly service, which is under $100, where I can use their address to get mail in, packages, order parts, etc. But I can also advertise that address as my own business address. I can go ahead and put it on for my listings. I can go ahead and put them on many other things. And when customers look us up, they can come right to the office as a walk-in, talk to the front customer service, which is included with the monthly fee. There's receptionist staff that are there. They'll speak to your customers as your own customers. So they are very white label. And they have many features that they have available for them by answering phones, available conference rooms. You can even book a day room, which is basically essentially your own office for those 24 hours if you ever needed it. So it was a lot of great features for the price range that we needed that worked in our budget. And that's kind of why we chose the virtual office versus opening up our own shop, which, as everyone knows, for those who have shops, there is quite a bit of overhead that you have to take into consideration before even thinking about starting business.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Now, the other thing too, I think the other benefit for you as far as a virtual office is you can open up more than one. So you can Correct. Be in several different areas.
Yep.
All at the same time while actually doing the work at your home.
Right, exactly. And that's a great idea to think about too, because then you can show your sort of your expanding per se, right? And depending on the areas that you are, and if you're in a metropolitan area, more than likely there's probably quite a few virtual offices available to you. Luckily for me, I'm very lucky where I worked for in our West Loop downtown area for 7 years and had our office there for now going on 3 years, going on 4 years in July. And when I took over to Evanston, which now I'm working in downtown Evanston, I was lucky enough that they had an office 5 minutes away from my job. So I went ahead and opened up one over there, and that made things so much more easier for me to not only get clients over there, but I had a way of transferring devices from one office to another to make it easier for me since I'm in Evanston a majority of the time. And it just looks better, like you mentioned, that it looks like you're scaling out, you have your expansion, and it allows you to grow and help people in those areas as well.
Now, one of the things that I can see is we're talking about pros and cons. One of the drawbacks I can see as being a single or sole practitioner, a sole entrepreneur, solopreneur, however you want to put it, one of the drawbacks can be is you are looking bigger than what you are. And part of the problem is sometimes it seems like maybe you might run into a problem where you can't deal with everything on a timely basis, like maybe somebody that's dropping something off would expect it to be. So how do you set the expectation for what you do?
Right. So for us, we kind of give a so we had to build this all out, right? And this is something you have to think about in trying to figure out what is going to be your time frame, what's going to be the repair time frame, and the time frame for your diagnostics. Now, once you figure out those two pieces, you have to also think about how long it'll take you to get to the device to one office from the other, depending on where they drop it off. And also you have to take in consideration is if you were out of pocket, how much time would that give for your repairs? So for us to kind of help alleviate this, as you said, like trying to figure out best way of them thinking that they're going to get repairs, you know, upfront and faster than what would be expected, we tell them right away upfront, look, we are going to go ahead and have a process that is 1 to 2 business days. It is this amount of money. And for us, our diagnostic fee is $75. And essentially, it'll be 1 to 2 business days to get it checked out. But sometimes we'll get it done earlier. It just depends. Now, 2 days is enough time for me to get a diagnostic to the customer. I can normally get a diagnostic to them later that evening and letting them know what's going on. Okay. Now, the 1 to 2 business days gives me a chance in case they drop it off on a day where I have a networking event or if I am out of pocket, that sort of deal. That gives me enough time to figure that out. Now, being able to have that allows you to kind of speed, it helps with the repairs. But another con because of this is because you have the reception staff at Regis, you don't have a way to establish a connection with your customer. Okay. And that's the issue that you have with any white label support or any type of white label service, whether it be a phone service, whether it be a white label office, you lose the transparency and you lose the connection you have with the customer. So being able to have a connection with them later on to help them with certain products or understanding what their network is or understanding how they're using their PC, you lose all that. Because unfortunately, when they get dropped off, unless you personally call them just to get more clarification of what they filled out in the work order, if they're very detailed on the work order and everything is set to go, essentially you are the behind the scenes tech to that customer. And in the same sense, when you're giving it back to them, the same route. There's no personal connection between you other than the reception or the person you have with the white label. And that's a con, in my opinion, because sometimes if I want to be able to let people know about a great service or let them know about something that's going on, they may find it informative, but they don't know me giving them that information. So because I don't have that connection with them, it makes it a little bit harder to make a sale or just explain to them why this email you're sending to them is very important.
Okay. You know, I'm just thinking about one of the reasons that I keep such a close-knit area, and I talk about I keep it in within my city limits pretty much, and it's usually a 6x6 square mile radius. What I've found as far as advertising out there, and I'm sure we'll get into that in another episode, but as far as advertising, it seems like most people will drive 5 miles or less
right.
to come to a location. That's what I've found. There are some people, I mean, I've had people from out of state that were staying here over a week period working for a company, and they contacted me because their laptop was down and they needed it fixed right away. I've had all kinds of different people that I still service that are in like New York City. Not to serve, I service them physically here and then service them remotely when they're in New York. And so there's a lot of different things to that, but that's why I keep it kind of close knit is it also kind of controls, I think, the customer expectation as far as most of those customers, because they live in the same locale that I do, they're okay with me working out of my home, and they're okay. And I'm okay with them having that knowledge of my physical address, because in my opinion, if you have my name, you pretty much can find out where I live and a lot of other things via the internet. Right. So that it's not going to be hard to do, especially if you own a mortgage on a house, not that hard. So with that being said, I think it's important for people to understand that the customer out there is going to have different expectations. Some people, when I tell them I work out of my home, they don't want to bring me their computer because they'd rather have a big box store or somewhere, some physical shop they're taking it to. And that's fine. For other people, because of the price difference, a lot of times where they're saving a little bit of money and, or they get better, faster service. Cause let's go back to that for a minute. If you have a 48-hour turnaround time, that beats the socks off most people in the industry.
Yep.
The only ones out here that actually get the 72-hour turnaround time are the single technicians. Most companies, most shops do not, there's no way for them to do that because they're running the shop and they're getting so many computers in at one time that they don't have that ability.
Right. And even if you even look at like, let's say that like the local big box store by me, I mean, they literally have a whiteboard as you're waiting in line to drop off the PC that says next time, how many days it'll take to look at your PC. And it says 7, it'll say 14, it'll say 3. And that number is always changing because, like you mentioned, the amount of computers that are in queue for them to even take a look at it.
Right.
And that's just to look at it. That's not even the repair time.
Right.
On getting it repaired.
So most of the time, so I say if you are 72 hours or less in your business, I think you're doing a phenomenal job. And not only that, as a single technician, I think a lot of times I probably go above and beyond what a lot of people do. I double, triple, and quadruple check to make sure that when the customer gets a PC back, they're happy with the results and there's no issues. And part of that too is because if I ever have to do a follow-up on a computer that I've serviced, that takes more time away from me and plus interrupts my workflow.
Right.
So if I can get it done right the first time, without any follow-up whatsoever, except that I follow up with them with an email within a couple weeks and 3 months and a year, those are fine. And then people will let me know, yeah, everything's working fine, or I have an issue.
Right.
And I can respond right back to those issues.
Right, exactly. And that's kind of why, you know, having, so in my business, the only recurring customers, upsells, everything that I've made recurring revenue have all been with clients I've personally talked to.
Okay.
And this is whether they were clients before I opened up my shop. This was either during when I was giving them updates about their computers because I had to call them over the phone or et cetera. All these have all had a personal touch. And I've slowly become to realize that I really want to get back to being to do that, which is why I chose doing on-site. And the reason for the on-site was two reasons. One is you have that personal connection. You'll get a feel for the customer as much as they'll have a feel for you. And you'll be comfortable enough to understand what to offer them and what not to. Because whether we like to or not, there are some techs that will upsell them everything under the moon. And some customers might buy everything or half or et cetera.
Really? Under the moon? That's what we're going with?
That's what we're going with. So there are other times where you know, there are techs that are not very comfortable with selling. And there's one thing to know that, you know, selling isn't a dirty word. You're trying to provide that customer with the best options and service for their PC. And as you, as the technician, and you being face-to-face, you being there, you giving them your time, your energy, and being able to provide them your experience, that's what makes everything count. And being able to have that personal connection, I believe, is far more powerful than having a shop that's kind of turn and burn.
Yeah, it could be any of those.
Yeah, the one where you drop off a laptop, it gets fixed, pop out, another one comes in, etc. And that's the difference, like what we talked about in a Podnuts live show not too long ago, is there's a difference between having customers and there's a difference between having clients. And clients are the ones that help you build your business.
Right.
So that was one of the reasons why I wanted to choose for on-site. And two, like you said, for those shops, people don't really like to drive out more than 15 minutes from where right. they are. Now, for me, I actually, when it's warm in the summer, I don't mind driving out that far out where it's like 45 minutes, an hour away, et cetera, because I know if I'm doing that, I'm driving out where the money is. And it's and I know that's a different spin on how I've been talking on a lot of my interviews and my appearances on my podcast. But the reason why I say that is because, and I say that specifically in that way, I drive out there where the money is. And this is why I say it that way, is because the fact that these areas, and everybody knows that these areas have, you know, the residents that are well off, that they're, you know, they've worked hard, they've gotten to do what they can do out there. And there are technicians and companies that know this and will try and get every cent from them. So the reason why I say I drive out there, because that's where the money is, a lot of my clients, is because I know I'm doing them a service to ensure that other techs that are out there that are doing this just for the money, I'm helping them, provide them with a service and making sure that they are better off. And I know that they're being taken care of. Because perfect example, I have a client that is out in Valparaiso, Indiana. It's an hour and a half away from me. And he is the type of person where if I tell him what it is, he's going to do it, he's going to pay it, and that's it. And he's a great customer. And I have oftentimes thought about not kind of just giving up that client and just letting him know, hey, you know what? It's outside of our range. It's a really far drive. But because I know people know that the area that he's in has the money per se, they're going to milk him for everything he's worth. And I can't do that to him. And that's why I still have him as a client, because I know I will make sure that he is taken care of with the most honest, reliable, and fair service that there is for his PC or his network that he has.
Well, let's clarify a little bit, because I don't think there's a problem. As long as you're giving the service, even if it's just a one-off customer, as long as you're giving the service and taking care of that customer for that period of time, then that's fine. Right. But I think what we're talking about is more the, I look at it as the local business ownership, where you're going to support your local businesses because they're going to support you back. And that's really what is, I think it's coming back to that in a lot of areas. People are really looking for, because one of the things I hear from a lot of customers is customer support is so horrible everywhere. Yes, maybe their problem gets fixed and is taken care of, but if they ever try to get anything else done, it's like trying to pull teeth. So when we're here, we want a customer or a client for life that's going to come back to us no matter what. Whatever problems they have, they're going to look to us and say, yeah, can you come take care of this problem? Those are the customers that we want, because I'd rather have a relationship with my client versus just having customers come in all the time. Now, don't get me wrong, you're still going to have just customers come in and you'll never see again.
Right.
Maybe you didn't click, or maybe they didn't like the service you did, or there could be a myriad of reasons.
Right. Or the job went bad.
You know, right.
Outside of what you could have done.
Right.
I mean, there's so many things. But exactly like you said, that is a consistent complaint about customer service, is that the customer service is just not there. And the number one reason why customer service is not how it used to be before is there's no transparency.
Right.
And the biggest piece about that is there's some, and a perfect example, I had a job that I had to go to an authorized service center, and it took them a month to repair this PC when they told me 2 weeks. Now, had they been transparent to tell me exactly what it was without having to pull teeth with pliers to figure out what's going on with the laptop. And this is me being a computer technician, computer business owner, talking to another computer shop, computer tech, computer business owner, which we both knew because we're on two different sides of the town. I was in downtown Evanston, they're in Skokie. So it's literally not that far away. There were neighboring suburbs. And they understood where I came from. And this is me as a computer business owner and a tech talking to them. I can only imagine a customer talking to them to try and figure out what's going on with their PC. Right. And that's kind of where I go back to what I was saying before, is making sure you have that connection and going to where your customers can use your help the most. That's where it all comes down to. And especially when it comes to remote support. Remote support, although, you know, that thing kind of got nixed probably quite a few months, probably even a couple years ago, with all the Microsoft scams, the Windows security scams, calling in the pop-ups that are coming up to call Microsoft. The transparency on remote support is so vague, but unfortunately, it's causing a lot of grief for a lot of customers, because now, when we try to pitch these type of services, which is not probably for some of us, not our primary service, it's really hard to let them know that we want to do this. And for those who have a niche that are doing this remote support, I can only imagine the difficulty it is to really try and get this service off the ground because of the limitations, such as the pay-per-click advertisement platforms won't let you do only computer repair remote support anymore.
Right.
A lot of times, you know, and TeamViewer is starting to put out ads on their products to say, hey, if someone's logging in, just know there's a possibility that there's a tech support remote scam going on. So there's a lot of software, a lot of things that are really making sure to protect people, but it's really hurting the remote support section of our business to really get in there, because the transparency is not there. And I believe if you are really in with the transparency, you shouldn't have an issue if you're already on the ground level with that customer going up and having them become a client.
Right. We'll dive into that a little bit more. I want to go back to on-site real quick before we kind of go out of that. We kind of talked about the pros of going on-site, getting that forward-facing customer, being able to touch the customer, talk to the customer, actually building that relationship. Let's talk about some of the cons in on-site, though. In the things that I've done, crawling underneath desks, on your hands and knees, with God knows what types of bugs and other things crawling around down there, spiders and whatnot, and webs and dust and dirt and all that.
And I have to agree with you on that, because one piece is for those that are very allergic. I mean, sometimes There are clients that have five cats that and they haven't vacuumed a day in their life. And it's one of those where if you don't have that Benadryl on hand after an hour, if you can last that long or more, you're going to be a hot mess. And if you have two other jobs right afterwards, you're going to be miserable the entire day.
Yeah, exactly. So there are, you know, the other thing is a lot of the things that you're doing, you know, with a laptop, it's not as bad, but with a lot of these desktop computers, especially with the older desktop computers that have been sitting there forever, you replace. Now, sometimes this is the only thing you can do. I still do on-site work and I still replace desktops at desks and all that kind of stuff. It's not my preferred work. And quite honestly, a lot of times if you think about it, even at businesses, when you're doing on-site, you're crawling under the business desks, under the counters, undoing the wires that are normally a mess. And so that's why I prefer to do business where people just bring me the computer. And that's why I offer a flat fee for doing that.
Right.
With the other thing, so for on-site, if I go on-site, I charge $80 an hour. And that starts from the time I leave my house. At first, I was thinking about I would do a trip charge. And I was playing around with that for a while. And I charge a trip charge one way. And then I double it if I had to come back and all this kind of stuff. Now, I said, you know what? I've got to make this process simple. So when I leave my house, the time starts. When I get to the customer and go through however long it takes me and I leave. And by the time I get back home, that's when the time ends. Because that's my time that I'm taking for that particular customer. Now, it took me a long time to come to this conclusion. And a lot of people are out there, well, I can't do that because they're going to go, well, you're only here an hour or you're only whatever. And a lot of times, if you are only on site, let's say you go in and it only takes 15 minutes to do a fix. Now, you're not going to drive somewhere. And especially Paco, like you were talking about, you're not going to drive 45 minutes
right
to do a 15-minute fix and get paid for 15 minutes of whatever your hourly rate is. You're going to go, no, here's a minimum. Some people will do an hour. Some people do an hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever it takes to make it worth your while. And then if you get it fixed quickly, you can actually take that time and maybe do some extra things since you've already got that time blocked out anyways.
Right.
To help them out, clean their PC up a little bit more. Maybe help them with some network setup things or whatever.
Use it as an educational.
There you go.
Time. I mean, they are paying you for that time,
right?
And it's your duty to make sure that they get their most worth. And if it gets to the point where there's nothing else left, and the customer just doesn't have anything else to really add on to it, you present them the invoice. Here's the bill, and that's just that.
And most of the time when you get close to that, if you're billing by the hour, if you get close to that hour, even if it's 45 minutes and you charge an hour, that I've never had anybody balk at that and go, what?
Yeah, I haven't either.
Yeah, I mean, especially, I was going to say, especially businesses and stuff like that. It's just, they just know that that's just common.
Right. And it's all in the transparency. It's all in the being able to let them know exactly what's going on. Because, I mean, if there are going to be the price gawkers that will get at you about, you know, hey, look, it's coming up on the hour. How long do you think it's going to be? Well, I don't know. It's probably going to take another half an hour or so. But just so you know, it is the hour. It is hourly. But after the first hour, like for us, we charge every 15-minute increment. So we're not going to charge you a full another hour if we don't hit that other hour.
Sure. Exactly.
And everybody does things differently. I mean, for those who do, and we'll jump into remote, they may do, I heard a different way of doing remote support before. But it's all about, like you said, I mean, as long as you're transparent and you explain to them, hey, everything is rounded up to the next quarter hour, they should know, you know, and especially if you're taking a deposit down before you go on site as well. You know, that's another thing to think about.
Well, and here's the other thing. So one of the things that I do, if I do have to go on site, I can usually assess the problem within 15 minutes, normal.
Right.
So I'll assess the problem. If I know whatever that particular problem is, bad hard drive, bad RAM, whatever, what I will do is I'll look at the customer and go, listen, this is probably going to take me a few hours to clean this up and make it right. So there's a couple things you can do in this particular case. You can either take the computer, take it back to your office, finish cleaning it up on your own time, and then bring it back, hook it up, get paid, and all is done. Or if you can get it within a short period of time, if you can get it to a point where it's workable, to where you can put your remote support software on there. And when you do that, you can go back to your office and say, hey, I'm going to log in once I get back. And we're going to go through this process and I'm going to finish everything up and I'll let you know, I'll email you when it's done. So there's a lot of different ways where you don't always have to stay on site the whole time, especially if you don't need to. But see, I use remote support, we'll go into that now, as a secondary means. So it's, in other words, I've already met the customer.
Right.
I've already created a rapport with them. They trust me. They give me unfettered access to their computer. Because they know they can call me up and go, hey, my computer's doing this. Can you check it out? But this is after we've already made that initial physical contact. And that's the difference. So I'm not calling them up going, hey, I'm from Microsoft Support or I'm from Kaspersky Support or whatever. And I've heard many, many different companies out there that we're a third party, blah, 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 for Microsoft, Kaspersky, whomever. And right. It's like... Really? And I have to tell my customers all the time, no, that's not true. Right. There is nothing like that. Microsoft does not work on your computer.
I had a client, and this is one of my favorite clients. She was one of my first ones when I first started. She was hit by that pop-up ad with the blue screen of death, call this number, right before the holidays. She called them. Mind you, I'm her computer guy for over 5 years. And she calls them because it was a Sunday morning. She felt bad to reach out to me and paid $150 to get them to clean it out, to supposedly clean it out, and go from there. So I didn't find out about this until 3 weeks ago. Mind you, she told me this was before in the holidays of November, before Thanksgiving.
Wow.
So it went 5 months. That they have had access to her machine. They have had all kinds of, who knows what they may have done on there.
Right.
The funny part about this whole thing is I have my maintenance plan on her desktop and I told her that we should put it on her laptop. And she said, because since it was so new, we probably shouldn't have to worry about it. The kicker is I've never charged her for my maintenance plan for this one. Cause she's one of my first ones and she's the one I usually use to try and deploy and test out all my things.
Okay.
And so it wasn't even a price thing. It was a matter of it's new. Don't worry about it. I have an antivirus on there where I should be okay.
Right.
So, and I explained to her that even if this was the case, I would have been able to see them installing another remote software. And that would have alerted me to call her to tell her what's going on. So remote support is turning out to be such to a lot of people as a dirty service because so many people are abusing it. And like you mentioned, I truly believe it is a secondary service for us. It is not, we're not going out there and saying, hey, we can repair the viruses. We can remove viruses remotely. It's an option, but we're not saying that that's one of our primary solutions. And yeah, we'll get clients that, message us on our talk to app or through the web chat, or we will have clients call in or submissions on our website, but it's a phone call. It's a phone call to, hey, we just want to get an idea of what's going on. What do you prefer? Do you prefer us to pick up the machine? Do you prefer us to be on site? Do you prefer to drop it off? Or, we can take care of it remotely. And so you don't have to make time for us or et cetera. So they're presented all these options to get it done. But again, it's not just the only thing to go through with it. And again, it focusing on only remote support, because again, it's back to, how do you figure out what type of tech you want to be? Right now, unfortunately, with the way our industry is with a lot of these scams that are happening, to be remote only is going to be very difficult without getting your name out there physically and meeting with these people.
Well, the other thing too is what I've found is that when somebody calls me up and I say, hey, I can remote in your machine, go to my website, download my remote support app. They do. I get on there. I look at it, say, okay, here's what it is. And I'll take their credit card and stuff like that. Here's the difference. I'm doing remote support, but they also live in my local city.
Right.
So the joke is, and I've heard this more than once, is Well, if anything goes wrong, I know where you live. Because right. obviously my address is on my website. So right. they do know where I live. And vice versa. I get their address and I get all that information up front before I even start doing anything, payment and all that kind of stuff, and take care of the problem. So I still do remote support as a first step because it saves them time, saves me time, and it's very beneficial. But I think the reason I'm able to do that is because they are so close to me that it's not a big deal. They literally could come to my house if they needed to.
But you also have made that physical connection with them, correct? You're giving them a call or you're sending them an email directly with your name, with your company. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's not a support email. It's not a, hey, we're Microsoft type deal.
No, I'm calling them because they've reached out. They've either put a contact form on my website.
Right.
Or they've called me physically.
Right.
And most of the time it's calling. So when somebody calls me, I'll answer the phone, say, yeah, we can do this. Let's take a look at what's going on. Can we get to your computer? Is it working well enough for, you know, and if it's not, then we have to go with step two or three. So I'm not saying remote support can't be a first step. I think it depends on, it wouldn't be a first step for me if I didn't know the person and I lived in one state and they lived in another.
Right.
So that's not the type of, now there are businesses out there that are doing that and they're doing quite well. It's just not my type of business. And I think it's going to get harder and harder, like you said, because they're breaking breaking down on a lot of these companies.
Right.
Because again, nothing any of us are doing wrong. It's just, there's bad companies out there that are exploiting people. We're paying the price for that.
Exactly. So yeah, it's just a matter of, like I said, it's one of those where it's going to be difficult. But again, you know, look at my model on part-time tech being able to have physical shops. You know, not a lot of people have thought about doing that sort of deal. You know, I was able to come up with a creative way to make it work. And you know, maybe there's somebody out there that has made remote support work because they made a creative spin to combat all these things that are being locked down because of those bad companies as well.
Right. Now let's go into, because I think we've got about 15 minutes left here. Let's, the second section, and I'm wondering where you're going with this, is you said decide how you would like to represent yourself to your customers. You were talking about that. And what did you mean by that?
So every computer tech, every computer business has to make a decision when they first start. And the reason why I say it has to make it first start, because it's very hard to deviate from this when you go down this road. And what I mean by that is, do you want to represent yourself as the business, the brand, or do you want to represent as yourself, that you are the brand? So for example, and I'm going to use the perfect example between me and my buddy Andy, who runs Green Ink. Andy has ran his business for over 20 years and has ran the business as Green Ink. But he's running it as himself. And he is the business. And everybody and every client, everyone that he knows Andy is Green Ink and Green Ink is Andy. Now, he's going to start becoming to a point where he's going to want to start scaling out. He's going to be too busy to take care of all his customers and his clients. And he's going to have someone jump on. When someone jumps on, they're going to have learning curves, or they're going to have learning opportunities. They're going to have a little bit of difficulty trying to get with the program because they're new and they're trying to get to know everything that's going on. There are going to be a majority of his customers and his clients that are going to say, no, I will wait for you when you're available because I like you. I'm doing business with you. And I, you know, nothing against him, but we just prefer you. Now, because they know Andy is Green Ink, Green Ink is Andy. Me, I presented the company as Prodigy Techs as the business. I run the business, but I'm presenting it more as a brand so that when I do scale out and have more technicians for somebody who happens to call or happens to have before, I can have technicians to go out as the brand because for some reason in a lot of people's heads, the brand will fix whatever it is if the individual didn't get it right.
Right. Okay.
So those are the two ideas that you want to think about, because if, like, perfect example, if I ran it as the business, as the brand, and I decide, you know what, it's only going to be me, solely me, I'm going to be the sole practitioner, but I presented myself as being a business, it's going to be harder for them to say, well, you know, you are representing yourself as a business, but you're the only one in the business.
Right. Okay.
So that's that, you know, and that's what you have to figure out. How do you want to do it? How you want to play it? And depending on what road you've gone down, it's going to be very difficult to change course. I'm not saying it can't be done, but it's going to be very difficult to go back to the other route that you should have done before because you didn't plan this out in the long term.
Well, I think from that standpoint, I think you can, I don't know if that you have to make a choice. So in my thought process, you could, and I'll give myself as an example. Mm-hmm. I created Tekna LLC,
right,
which is the name of my business. I am Tekna LLC. Right. And I am, you know, I played around with the wording and I would have things on my website talk about, you know, we, us, and I change a lot of that stuff now. And I'm like, no, you know what? It's me right now. Now, I fully expect that if I were to pull somebody on down the road, and yes, people are going to want to deal with me, that's fine. But what I think a lot of people have done in the past that have done this, they started off as a sole practitioner. Let's say they want to get to a point where they actually hire on employees. What will happen is the customer will say, well, I want Jeff to come in and take care of this problem. I say, that'll be fine. I will be able to get there in 3 days. So you can either have John, our other guy, who will take care of your problem. And if you have any problems, you can get a hold of me and take care of me, and I'll take care of it. Or you can wait 3 days and I'll be out there. And I think a lot of times I've heard many businesses go through that transition. So I think now if you were to, I think you could even do it even if you name yourself like, I don't know, whatever your name is, computer repair, which a lot of people do, right?
Right.
And even though that's the name of the business, it doesn't mean that that's always going to be the person working on the computer. Now, with that being said, as you get started in your business, I would seriously sit and think about what type of business do you want to have? And are you going to want to expand down the road? And you do need to put some things in place to get your mind in that area, if right, that's what you want to do. Or if you want to stay a sole practitioner, which I'll just be honest with you guys, there are people out there right now who are single techs, who their revenue is over $1 million. Okay, there's actual real people that do that. And now a lot of people in the industry will kind of poo-poo at that and go, yeah, no, it does happen. And it can be done. And there's many different ways to do it. And maybe we'll get into some of those. But the point being is you can have a very profitable business doing it by yourself if that's what you want to do. Right. Now, if you don't want to be that person, if you don't want to be the technician that's in the trenches all the time, then you're going to be able to have to set your mind up to be able to expand out from that. And you can't hold on to everything like, you're the only person that can do it. You're going to do the best job. And that's really, it's more of a mindset thing to me as far as where you want to go. I think however you start off, basically what I would say is don't lie.
Right.
Don't do the, you're a sole practitioner, but you do the we, us, whatever, and your customers don't really realize that you're just one person. And so they expect when they call that you're going to be out there. Again, you're going to build this business as a creating a relationship with each and every individual. And so that they're going to use you. And maybe there is a time where you go, I'm going to have to hire some people to help me or get some subcontractors that can fill in the gaps.
Right.
But there's many ways to do that.
Yep.
Would you agree with that?
You're saying exactly what I was,
okay,
what I was trying to get at.
Gotcha.
Is essentially right. You have to, whatever you make up as far as your mindset of what you were trying to do, you know, you have to figure out how you want to do it. And if you do have aspirations to scale out, or if you feel that, you know, you have to have a contingency, if you feel burnt out and decide that you want to make it, that it's just you, you want to make sure you have those things in mind before you make that transition, because it will be difficult to make those transitions, because again, it's going to be either people don't want to wait, or you really just don't want to go out there because you've kind of got fed up with being a operator and you want to be more of an owner.
Right.
So it just depends on that, but it's just something to make sure to keep in mind.
Very good. Yep. All right. So should we go into the next topic? Can we deal with it?
Yeah, let's squeeze that one in.
Okay, so determine type of business, niche or niche if you're in Canada.
So I guess the biggest
that's my good friend Corey Fruitman.
Right, right. So the biggest thing about that is a lot of people who start out tend to just kind of take everything all at once. And I don't knock this because
you learn from it, right?
Say what?
You learn from everything right. that you do, right?
Exactly. And you really find out what you really like.
Right.
You know, you when you're starting out, you don't know what you like. You don't know what you don't know. And by taking all this business and figuring out what type of clients you like, what type of work you like to do, what type of work you don't like to do, and it really helps you focus down. But once you get to the point where you say, you know what, I would really love to have these type of jobs and I would like to focus on these type of jobs as my forte, whether it be I love being able to try and figure out how to recover data for a customer, or you know what, I love being able to do optimizing a laptop or optimizing a piece a customer's computer to the point where suggesting to them optimizations and rebuilding per se, or just you love getting rid of viruses because you love doing, you know, trickling down, figuring out what's going on and you want to become, you know, the virus removal expert. These are the things that you want to try and think of. And when you really start to dial down to it, you can concentrate all your efforts to it. And I've heard a lot of people and I think Matthew Rodella and Lisa Hendrickson are going to be doing a program soon that on how niching down and really figuring out what's your passion is really going to help escalate not only your time on doing things, but the monetary gains from it because it's something you love to do.
Right. And I'll say with that, I think jack of all trades, master of none is a true statement. But at the same time, realize that in this business, there are probably still things that you're going to have to do that you're not going to like. Yep. And that's okay. But if you can concentrate the majority of the things that you like to do, I'll give you an example. I hate to pull apart laptops, but I'm really, really good at it. So actually, it's one of the easier things for me to do. But it's still one of those things where I'm so good at it. So don't necessarily think, yeah, this is kind of a pain, but I'm so good at it and it's so easy to me that I continue to do it. And that's I can pull up a laptop apart in literally less than 10 minutes. And a lot of people look at me and go, no, you can't. And they don't believe that I throw all the screws in one bowl and, you know, and pick them out. But I do because I can just see it. So those are things that I've gotten really good at. You know, a lot of people still don't do like the power jack repairs where you have to solder them and desolder the old power jack and resolder a new power jack. Now there's not a whole lot of those left around anymore. I haven't seen any in a while. But I still do those. If they're there, I'll still do them. I'll tear it apart, get down to the motherboard, unsolder that thing, and I can usually have that thing done in like 45 minutes. Gotcha. So for me, because it's so easy for me to do, it's worth the amount of money that I charge to get it done. And so, but there's other things like, and a lot of people will come to this, there's a lot of things like, you know, paperwork. Nobody wants to do paperwork. And maybe you do need to get an accountant or something like that can do your books and different things like that. But we'll talk about that later. But really getting the things that not necessarily that you just enjoy, but also the things that you may be really, really talented at.
Right.
So even though it's frustrating when you're pulling a laptop apart and it's not coming apart exactly right and you're trying to figure out why this thing's not unsnapping. But once you figure it out, you're like, that was nothing. So, but
yeah, the only other thing I would key off of that is frustration is good when you're trying to figure out because you're trying to figure out a problem. Stressing over something is not
right.
So
good point.
If you find it where you've gone through four laptops and it's stressful as heck to disassemble these things, and because the newer laptops are becoming more complicated and you just really want to get away with it, make sure you know that to yourself, because when it's a stressful repair and just trying to get to it, you're going to cause more damage than good.
Right.
And you're going to get and stress being a stressful and frustration, stress and being frustrated combined is a terrible combination because the laptop will be a victim toward that. So like for me, you know, I'm getting to the point where I'm done with keyboard replacements that are underneath the laptop, where you have to take out the entire laptop apart, which that's not the big issue. The big issue is the 40 screws that are almost the size of iPhone screws to take off one by one with the miniature screwdriver and hoping that they didn't use a cheap screw and strip the head.
Paco, you know how to get around that?
Crazy.
No, that's if you needed to fix it. Yes, that's one way. But no, you just having a proper tool set.
Right. And it's the, but again, it's one of those where it's the way you learn, right? And yep. The way that you get to having the screw extractor pliers, being able to make sure that you're fitted to have these tools for the job. And if the job presents itself where you don't have the tools, now you have an excuse to get the tool to help you with future jobs as well.
And, you know, just as a little side note, one of the things I'm noticing, especially in the Ultrabooks, there are certain parts, like when it comes to a touchpad, that they might be built into the whole uppercase. And a lot of times what's happening is it's really hard to find these things.
Right.
And so I'm not sure exactly where laptop repair is going unless there are good, you know, distributors out there that have the parts on hand for all these different units. And we're talking units that are 3, 4, 5 years old. That all of a sudden it's very hard to, especially once you start getting towards a 4 and 5, it's hard to find the parts for them for certain things. Not all. Some things are very generic and some things are, they go across a whole laptop line. So, but yeah, I agree with that. Just you don't want to be stressed out about something. And that's the other thing too. I will say this. Don't promise somebody something that you are going to stress yourself out about. If you're going to sit there and go, I can turn this around in 24 hours, and that's your statement, and you're not getting it done in 24 hours, especially as a part-time tech, because a lot of us have to work a full-time job.
Right, you and life happens.
Exactly, and life happens. Things happen, and you can't always get to that. You've got, I always tell my people, 48 to 72 hours, and most of the time, it's less than 48 hours. But sometimes it goes over 72 hours. It just depends on what's going on, or what I found out that was wrong with that particular machine.
Yep, totally agree.
Paco, I think, man, I can't believe I'm looking at the topics that we have coming up, and I think this mini-series, we don't know exactly how long it's going to go, but I think there's going to be a lot of good information and a lot of things, and if you guys have some things that you want to ask us, we can answer those in the show over the topics we've talked about or the topics that were coming up, so... yeah, I'm excited about just kind of going back down and breaking everything down to the basics like when we started.
Yep, I agree.
Very cool. All right, so Paco, if people want to find out more about what you do and what you've got going on, where could they do that?
Yeah, so if anybody wants to reach out to me, you can reach out to me at on my website, prodigytex.com. We have a contact form there. Or you can connect with me on LinkedIn, or I'm starting to get more active back on Twitter. It's ShyTechCEO, ChiTekSCEO, to speak with me directly. If you want to hear my lovely voice again, I actually co-host a podcast with Matthew Rodella over at the Computer Business Podcast, and you can find us at computerbusinesspodcast.com, where we kind of just discuss a lot of how to improve your computer business, whether you're starting out, you're kind of in the middle of just trying to figure out what's your next thing to do, or you're just trying to grow and scale.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming out and bringing this great idea to the show, because I think this is a little bit different than what we do normally. This show is for you guys. It is for the tech person. It is for the computer repair tech, the business owner that would like to come on and share what they do in their shop. Again, what computer repair techs do on a daily basis, whether they own the business, whether they're working in the business. And this is what this show is for. But we wanted to take this little side mission here and basically turn it into a something. How do you get started from the beginning and move on from there? And what are some of the things that we wish maybe we would have done different? So I think we just barely touched the surface with how to get started and where you can get started. And we'll go into some of the other business practices and things that we went through in the coming weeks. So if you guys want to find me, you can find me on Google+ at Jeffrey Halish or Twitter at TechNutPC. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on this show, email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Don't forget, if you guys need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. You guys can help support the Podnuts Network. Next time you're shopping on Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.